And we're live. Well, welcome to this special situation report. I wanted to get Matt on to talk through the situation in Ireland, the situation in Lebanon, and talk through his thoughts on how he thinks things are going to develop. If you haven't watched the interview from a week ago, he and Michael Young did an interview talking about Ireland, and I think Ireland is the bellwether for what they want to do in the UK, what they want to do in Australia, and what they want to do here. So, Matt, I'll let you just go, 'cause
Yeah, because well, Ireland is like a perfect little laboratory experiment. It's a much more controlled experiment. United States of America is 350 million with large land borders north and south. Ireland is just a half dozen million, not even, and about a third of them aren't even Irish anymore. So it's a very
that's true.
controllable. It's like a little prison colony experiment. And the people in charge are extremely progressive, socialist, communist, and naive. And it's very hard to separate where does the naive split from the diabolical. Because Michael Young has talked to these leaders, and they're very they literally want to talk about global warming as if that's the greatest threat. It's like your country is being invaded. Your agriculture is being wiped out. And you want to talk about global warming as the biggest threat. That's the leadership of Ireland. So are they lying or are they just that naive? So it's hard to split this, but if you just go to the results, what does it matter if somebody naively let a gang of assassins into your house, or if they planned knowingly to let a gang of assassins in your house? They let a gang of assassins in your house. They opened the door. And on a much bigger scale, obviously, Biden, Harris, Mayorkas, they opened the door to the United States. But Ireland can be like a little bellwether for us. I mean, they are literally building military camps right next to towns along all of the eastern ports of Ireland, from Dundalk in the north to Rosslare in the south. Next to all of these ports, there's really only two ways to get into Ireland if you're not on a little teeny sailboat, which is how I first got there. The only ways to get into Ireland, you fly in, or you take a big ferry, a big car ferry or a passenger ferry. And right next to all of those ports, they're building what can only be described as military camps. They put walls around them, men only. Drone footage shows barracks. And the local Irish that go out, I think this weekend there's going to be a protest in Dundalk, which is a port in the north on the Republic of Ireland. There's going to be another protest. The Irish have a national police force called the Garda, and they're basically showing also that police for their paycheck will just sell out their own people. Like in England, they're on the side of the invaders against the locals
What
to
do you think
keep their.
that's all about, Matt? Do you think that's these guys are hardcore communists? Do you think they're just useful idiots?
I
I
think they're
mean,
stooges that want their paycheck, but hopefully they're getting close to a breaking point. But you can't separate out. And we saw this in Canada with the truckers' strike. It's very hard to distinguish some of these foreign mercenaries. Even at J6, there were some of the videos you see before the Capitol break-ins. Guys are clearly Ukrainians. So they can be brought around the world as hardcore spec op units, well paid, trained, they know tradecraft, they have no problem getting in and out of the country because the deep state is expediting their secret visas, and they can get in and out of countries. So a lot of these people in Ireland, they don't speak English, or they don't speak at all. They're in a Garda uniform. Sometimes they're wearing balaclavas, and it's hard to determine if they're Irish at all. because a lot of these countries are recruiting foreign people with police experience, quote unquote, you know, and just putting them into a uniform. And it becomes very hard to dig out if they're actually Irish at all. So I recommend to, you know, to people in Ireland, Canada, the UK, ask them to say something in English. Are they really Brits? Are they really Irish? Are they really Canadians? Or are they foreign, you know, hardcore troops that are like, in essence, contract soldiers for the deep state? Americans are very, very familiar with this concept of being a contract soldier. You know, lots of our friends are very proud. I was making $1,000 a day. I was making $2,000 a day guarding this or that in Iraq or Afghanistan, other countries. Great money.
I think that was a test bit, Matt. I think they did all of that in Iraq and Afghanistan just to prove the concept around the world.
Well,
right? Because came out of that, Wagner.
And the concept works. Yeah, whether it's Wagner or Triple Canopy.
Global security. You
know, Blackwater, obviously, in former days, Eric Prince. But the idea of recruiting very well-trained guys, some of the videos out of Ireland, these guys with the balaclavas and the black t-shirts, no tattoos, not going crazy beating up people, but very firm and insistent, speak some enough English to be understood. I think they're contract soldiers. And I don't know who's paying their checks, but probably the same people that are paying for Kellyanne Conway's, you know, I can't believe she's still working for Trump. I mean, she's obviously being paid by the Ukrainians, you know, to keep the money flowing. So this whole idea of employing foreign mercenaries, it's proof of concept is over. It's done. So when you see soldiers in a foreign country, whether it's beating up the Canadian truckers or in the UK or in Ireland, I really want to know, are they Irish? Are they English? Are they Canadian? If they won't say, and something I recommend to everybody is to call them out. I asked an Irish guy, what's like a test you could just say? You know, and one would be like, hey, who in Dublin's fair city, who pushed the wheelbarrow, you know, with the cockles and muscles? Who is that? If they don't know it's Molly Malone, they're not Irish. It's sort of like questions during World War II in the Pacific theater, Japanese would infiltrate and it was hard to distinguish between, say, Filipinos and Japanese infiltrators or in other countries. And you would ask them like questions about like, you know, who's the leadoff batter for the Yankees? Every American would know it. Or ask them to say something that Irish have a confusion over L's and R's. So ask them to, you do a password that is very difficult with the L's and the R's. And the Japanese would fail that. Well, I think that these Garda, just going back to Ireland, if they are protecting fighting age men, setting up barracks in key logistical locations, for example, on the road between Dublin and the international airport, you know, they can cut Dublin off from the world. They, even if they didn't provide container loads of AK-47s, a few truckloads of machetes, is we're talking about bringing in men who are tribed up. So it's not just like generic Middle Eastern men. It's like you're importing contract mercenaries from a unit in Romania or a unit in Poland or a unit, you know, in Syria. These are, so you don't just put out a casting call at random. You hire guys that are already in a unit and they've got a CO and the CO says, I can provide 50 guys. And they all already have their own internal communications. And something I watched the round table from last night, it's excellent. You know, the communications tradecraft was like super high level. I can't recommend it enough. And something that Matt Brushbeater NC Scout was talking about was how hard it is, even if you have, say, a native, speaking of Iraq or Afghanistan, even if you had an American, Iraqi or Afghani native speaker, he could not keep up with the local slang. And if somebody is using, even like, say, an American context, CB radio, if you're saying that, to use the example that NC Scout used, if you're listening to CB radio and somebody says, "I'm selling goat and chicken meat on Friday at 2 at the tractor supply store," and that's just buried in a thousand other CB radio conversations, how do you know if that doesn't mean I'm providing C4 and AK-47s at 4 on Sunday? Because a very common code will be, for example, addition codes would be like, if I say 2 p.m., it means 4 p.m. If I say Friday, it means Sunday. And if I say tractor supply, it means Lowe's.
Yep.
And the people on the network know that. But the people that are monitoring it haven't got a freaking clue. They literally think you're talking about goat and chicken meat at tractor supply on Friday. So going back to Ireland, you've got like camps of Georgians, you know, camps of Syrians, and their tradecraft is already strong. They've already been in war. And yeah. I like to I always refer to this, and I hope I'm not boring, but you know, the Russian fox fur farm experiments where they bred wild foxes to be tame in 3 or 4 generations, which doesn't take long for foxes. And they in 3 or 4 generations, in 10 or 12 years, wild foxes become like little tame Pomeranians with curly tails and a short nose that'll hop on your lap and bark. Well, that's what the Irish are. That's what the Germans and English are today. Their DNA still says German, Irish, but they're like tame Pomeranians. And if you dump 10 wild foxes in amongst, you know, 30 or 40 of these tame Pomeranians, and the wild foxes are already in a pack, they've already got like who's alpha, the mm-hmm. whole structure. You yep. dump them in among a bunch of lapdogs, the lapdogs are going to be totally slaughtered. And the Russian fox farm experiment worked in reverse. You could select for the most aggressive of the tame foxes out of each litter, and in a few generations, bring them back to being like wild foxes because the DNA is still there. But in the case of Europe, there won't be 3 or 4 generations to bring them back. They'll be extinct.
Yep.
The locals will be wiped out in that one generation where they're tame. You know, and I like to compare this to the American, the settling of the American West. And you can read books on this because there were Americans captured by Comanches and Apaches at age 11 and 12 and raised for a decade, totally Stockholm syndromed. Even if their parents had been killed, they would become totally Stockholm syndromed. And when they're brought back and eventually reorganized as Europeans, because they'll run away to go back with the Indians every chance they get for a couple of years, the Comanches were amazing fighters. Every Comanche kid had to be able to jump on a galloping horse, for example. Like, they drive a galloping horse next to you, you've got to be able to grab its mane and sling your arm, you know, no saddle, nothing. Man for man, a Comanche could outfight any U.S. cavalry, period. I don't care what period.
Yeah.
But the blue coat soldiers just kept coming. They just kept coming. The Comanches couldn't be replaced. Those fighters couldn't be replaced. They just, no matter how many skirmishes they were in, the Europeans just kept coming. And now we in the West, in America, especially in Europe, Ireland, Germany, Britain, we're like the Indians on the bluff, just watching the wagon trains going by and saying, "Well, we attacked a few wagon trains and the blue coats chased us, but there's still more wagon trains." You know, no matter what we do, there's more wagon trains. And even though we're much better fighters than the blue coats, every time we lose people, we can't replace them, and they just send another platoon. And that's the position. So ask the Comanches and Apaches and Cherokees and Sioux how it goes for just watching yourself being replaced. You know, at what point do the Germans stand and fight? I don't think they do. We're seeing in UK today, they have like Pakistan Independence Day. British police are dancing with the Pakistanis. Yeah, it's, I see no future for Europe right now. And unfortunately, I don't see even like the, the IRA in Ireland, what most modern people think of as the IRA was just what was happening in Northern Ireland, the British Ulster part of Ireland, which is part of the UK, the Scotland, England, Wales, and Northern Ireland is the United Kingdom. So when we think of the IRA, we're not thinking about Dublin. We're thinking about Belfast and Derry. Now, if you go back to the 50s and to the beginning of the 20th century, the Easter Rebellion, et cetera, in 1916, the 1920s, the IRA was all over Ireland to get the British out. They managed to get the British out of all the counties except for Ulster, that part of Ireland. And I don't think that, there are still people alive from the 60s, 70s, 80s that remember the fight against the British in Northern Ireland. But I don't think that there are enough Irish that will ever be ready to fight. And the social control mechanisms, which, you guys discussed very well last night on the, on the round table about, the tradecraft of communication security, et cetera. They've got so many tools. As soon as somebody even thinks a bad thought, they're practically arrested. So I don't know what's going to happen to Ireland, and maybe it's just going to be a canary in our coal mine for what happens if you don't wake up soon enough. But I know that if you dump 10 wild wolves in a pack into a neighborhood with 50 random domesticated dogs that each like hang out on a porch and aren't packed up, aren't in a tribe in any way, the 10 wild wolves will just destroy the 50 domesticated dogs. And even though the German Shepherd has wild wolf DNA inside of him, there won't be three or four generations to revert to that kind of ferociousness.
Do you think that this is so? There's two parts to that, which I agree with, right? So part of why we talked ComSec and OPSEC last night on the roundtable is that a lot of people don't understand it's not just about having backup comms and having, communication grid. If things go down, you got to have the ability to keep your comms secure, right? Most people don't understand that. And same thing with the population. You have to have the right mechanisms in place to keep your population not just secure, but to keep it robust. And I would say, and I think that you probably talked to this, I think it's been bred out of those populations. I think the education system, I think the cultural narratives for years and years and years, and I think the fact that they were disarmed has led them to this place to where they can't defend themselves. Yeah,
it's totally been bred out. And something that has stuck with me for many years is a radio broadcast I heard 15 years ago, at least, by an addiction specialist who had been a heroin addict and, kicked it and went to college and became, a psychologist who specialized in treating people with addictions. And he said, there's no pain of withdrawal from heroin. That's the wrong way to understand it. What happens with heroin is your goal lines, your endpoints of your pleasure and pain bell curve become so skewed that you think that this absence of extreme pleasure, you can't stand it. Even though if somebody else had your same, body functions at that time, they wouldn't feel pain, but the addict does. So, kind of going back to that, the settlers and the Comanches, nobody had air conditioning. They were all pretty tough. The settlers were damn tough. Maybe man for man, they weren't as tough for Comanches, but there were 100 times more settlers in the end. but nobody had air conditioning. Now, if you live in Phoenix and the power went out and you couldn't keep the temperature below 100, people would lose their minds. Or if water didn't come out of the tap, people would absolutely lose their minds, in the same way that the heroin addict experiences withdrawal as agony. We would experience the loss of climate control, flowing water, full supermarkets. We would lose our minds.
I would say even I would say people lose their minds if they can't get Starbucks.
But the
level of emissions are too.
But if just a few generations ago, I mean, don't have to go to the Wild West, even say pre-World War II, nobody had an expectation of having air conditioning at home.
Nope.
And you know, you got hot when it was summertime. In Baltimore, where I grew up, in the summertime, entire families sometimes would go to like the local park, the local grassy park, and have like an impromptu camp out with hundreds of their neighbors. And that was in a high trust society where nobody was even concerned about somebody like grabbing one of their daughters to attack them. It wouldn't have crossed their mind. You had a high trust society. It's very hot. We're going to spend the night at Edmondson Park, sleeping on the hill by the lake, and sort of have a, you know, party atmosphere, and everybody goes to bed. That's out the door, because nobody would go to a park like that because they'd be robbed. Kids would be kidnapped. It would just be there'd be urban youth popping wheelies on stolen motorbikes all over the place. So you have to stay in your house. And if the air conditioning goes out, the water isn't running, the society is going to crumble immediately. So, and we're the same by DNA. We're the same people that we were 80 years ago, 100 years ago. What's changed is our social conditioning. So in Ireland, yep, they have this, they're the same Irishmen who, you know, were the generation of Michael Collins. They're not different than Michael Collins inside of their cells, but their social conditioning has turned them into tame little poodles. And tame poodles cannot stand up to wild wolves. And the traders are importing wild wolves, and the wild wolves are going to take that island over. I don't see any other way.
I don't either. And I think, you know, I could talk to this ad nauseum, but I think you have a better finger on the pulse than I do. You and Michael Yon definitely see it for what it is. I used to think that the Irish would pop off first and that would be a civil war, but we haven't seen it yet. And all of the conditions for civil war are there.
I don't think we will.
I don't think so either. I don't think we'll see it in the UK either, because it's just like here. The reason why this is important is the fact that we have a million people a month coming across our border now. It was like 500,000 up until last year. And now as they get the road more and more improved, coming across the Darien Gap.
10,000 a day is a division of fighting age men. Ireland has, you know, they always change these things. And Ireland's military is kind of a joke. I mean, even though the training of the guys in it are patriotic and they have good training, but they haven't, they've slipped below 6,000 men in the Irish Republic Army. 6,000 men. They've got probably 600,000 fighting age men ready to cut their throats. And of the 6,000 Irish Army, there's probably double that in the Garda that are either traitors or foreign mercenaries already. I mean, how does that end? But anywhere that you see, like in Canada, Ireland, especially Canada and Ireland, if you see people that you don't recognize in a police uniform, and they're keeping like, I have orders to not speak, not interact, assume they're not even from your country. Make them prove it. Do like we did in World War II with, you know, infiltrators. Ask them to, you know, ask them who's Molly Malone, right? If they don't know, they're not from there. So assume that they are foreign mercenaries and make them prove that they're not. And if they do say something like, you know, to prove that they're Irish or Canadian, then ask them why they're traitors who are betraying their people.
That's the part I don't get, man. I don't get that.
For a paycheck.
Yeah.
For so you get another year of a paycheck and your children are going to be, you know, raised as sex slaves? I mean, what kind of a man is that?
Well, it's even worse than that, Matt. It's now DHS and the government agencies are asking their employees to turn in their family members that aren't loyal to this new Maoist agenda. I when I heard it this morning, I just was shocked. And the guy I was talking to, he's in the system. He's like 2 years from retirement. I'm like, you realize that retirement isn't going to be there. I don't even plan on a military retirement because by the time I get ready to draw it, we're going to be bankrupt. We're already bankrupt, right?
I don't plan on water coming out of the tap.
I was waiting for it, man.
I don't plan on water coming. Every day with electricity is a good day. And that's
it is.
Because our enemies aren't stupid. You know, I know you wanted to talk about Lebanon, Israel, all of that. The same idiots like Lindsey Graham, they are absolutely bucking for a war with Iran. And I saw, you know, in the news today has been what they called during the Watergate era, the Nixon Watergate era, a limited hangout. A limited hangout is like creating a fire break against a approaching firestorm, forest fire, where in political terms, you know, you admit part of it, but you can't, it's sort of a deflection to buy time, a limited hangout. So now they're saying, they just skipped over, oh, Russia blew up their own pipeline. Now they're saying somebody named Vladimir Z chartered a sailboat and did this demolition raid on the Nord Stream pipeline, which is a complete crock of shit. It's the same as me saying I built the Golden Gate Bridge with an erector set. The pipelines that were attacked are kilometers apart, different parts of two different pipelines. I think that there were three explosions, and I think there were four charges and one failed. That's how I would look at it. So when the Swedes did their little examination afterwards, as soon as they got down there and took pictures, they said, top secret, we know who did it, but we can't say because it's top secret, because it was obviously Americans.
Yeah.
This was not done from a sailboat. This was not done from a sailboat. You do not swim down, you know, 280 feet with your open circuit scuba rig. People that know about scuba, 280 feet is like a professional dive.
Yep. And you have even, to have the right.
Even a bounce dive. A bounce dive. If you swim to 250 feet and come back to the surface, you need to decompress. Okay. You can't just, that's no working on the bottom. That's assuming that you could find these pipelines 250 feet down. If you know how in Blackwater, you can't, if you put your hand on your mask, you can't see your hand. Okay. This was a state level operation. We were conducting in June of every even year, Baltic Operation 2022, BALTOP 2022. And it involves all of these NATO navies. If you look at the Baltic Sea, it's NATO all the way around, except for a little bit of Russian Kaliningrad, which is very sequestered. So it's a complete NATO lake. We have systems going back to the 70s called a CAPTOR port torpedo, which is basically a torpedo in a capsule that will lay on the bottom of the ocean until it is activated, because you don't want it just going off by itself because it hears the right propeller noise. So it requires two things. It needs to just sit there and then be activated by a coded acoustic digital signal to say, turn on and now listen for the right Russian ship going by. And then only fire if you hear the propeller signature of the correct one of these Russian ships going by. So this is not like even new technology. This is old technology called a lingering munition. So putting something in the sea that's going to wait for a few months and then go off is something the U.S. Navy has been doing for more than 50 years. We have systems from helicopters for mine countermeasures that are lowered into the ocean, and then small drone torpedoes with a camera in front, camera and sonar in front, that are feeding a fiber optic cable wire, very thin and very long, back to the helicopter. So the helicopter is just in a hover, lowers these things into the water, off it swims. It finds the pipeline by sonar, close range sonar. Then a camera allows the operator to place the charge right next to the pipeline, right next to it. If it was an enemy mine, you're demining a harbor, for example, then you could say, all right, and we're going to fly away and in 5 minutes explode and take out the mine. But it's no problem whatsoever to lay these charges next to a pipeline and just have a modification provided by, I would assume, the CIA, that will allow this thing to lay there for 3 or 4 months until the National Command Authority, President Biden or whoever his handlers are, says, today's the day, I want you to blow it up. So the charges are just laying there by the pipeline until a sono buoy is dropped into the water, either from a, you know, fixed wing or helicopter. And then it's given a command, okay, wake up and detonate in immediately, 1 hour, tomorrow, 24 hours, whatever the window is. I think that's what happened. This is a state-level operation. The idea that they're floating now, and I'm bringing this all the way back around to Iran and the greater war picture. The idea that they're floating the concept of doing this from a sailboat with Polish and Ukrainian divers hopping in the water with scuba bottles is laughable. It's like saying Matt Bracken and Stephen Murray climbed to the top of Everest and paraglided.
No problem, man.
Yeah.
Any day of the week, no problem. Just climb up there and go after it.
Conceptually, that would be possible. It's not conceptually possible that people chartered a sailboat with the support gear required to put charges in three or four different locations. I personally believe there were four, two on each pipeline, one failed. They still got both pipelines, right? Each pipeline had one and a backup. You know, one is, you know, two is one and one is none. So each pipeline had two charges. One pipeline had two detonations. One pipeline had one detonation. The idea that this was done by rogue Ukrainians tells me, number one, they're getting ready to throw Ukraine off the bus. You know, they're going to throw Ukraine off the under the bus. This is why they said the guy's name was Volodymyr Z, to plant this, the idea like, oh, that sounds like the president of Ukraine. But the other thing I take away from that is we have really stupid people. I mean, you saw the thing, the Secret Service agents breastfeeding at the Trump rally, right? So don't think that, like, oh, that was the Secret Service. We must have really smart people at the CIA. No. So somebody had to think, well, we want to discredit Ukraine, and we kind of know we can't blame Russia for the pipeline anymore. So let's say that Ukrainians did it from a sailboat. This is like, you know, you've got to have a better cover story than that. You know, that, so if that level of strategic thinking is going on with the Nord Stream pipeline, where we attack critical infrastructure for one of our, you know, key allies, Germany and Europe. Germany is like the feeder hub for Europe for the natural gas. Imagine the level of thinking going into, like, we're going to attack Iran. I don't know, because there's been many stories about who killed the Hamas negotiator in Tehran, whether it was all these fake stories are coming out.
No, it's Mossad.
Standoff weapons. Bomb.
Come on. Mossad did it.
But whether,
doesn't matter how they did it, whether it was direct action, doesn't matter. They killed him. They have a history of doing that shit.
Of course. But it's critical to understand, was it a standoff weapon fired from an aircraft? Like, was it an F-35 that was refueled by tankers that we provided Israel?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
See, we didn't give is for a long time. We did not give Israel tankers. And it was, you know, there was a obvious reason why. You know, we wanted Israel to have a combat radius of X, not 3X. Because if Israel has a combat radius of 3X, they're off the chain. They could do something to start World War III. And we wanted to be able to control that. So giving a couple of years ago, giving them tankers so that they could extend the range of their aircraft really was, a huge mistake. But if at the level of our strategic thinkers, if they believe that they can blame the Nord Stream pipeline on rogue Ukrainian divers operating from a sailboat, then, you know, make an extrapolation to how stupid they are when they're planning for war with Iran. I mean, 20% of the world's oil goes through the Straits of Hormuz, 20%. If we go to war with Iran, the Straits of Hormuz will be closed down indefinitely for months, maybe forever. Yeah. And the world immediately the price of energy goes up 1,000%. You know, it'll go to $1,000 a barrel, like in a week. Just taking 20% out will make the price go crazy.
Let me ask you a question, Matt, because this brought up a good point. I was going to hit this later, but now's the time to hit it. You honestly think that depleting the strategic oil supply here in the States and precipitating a war is part of the plan?
Sure.
So they do close the Strait of Hormuz, because I look at the situation that they're trying to put us in a kill box like they did in Sri Lanka. That was the test.
I think at different levels, you have different people. You have people with different motivations. You have generals that are just, I want to retire and get a job at Raytheon, right? They're still at that level. But you have people that really hate America and think that America is the last hindrance to their global utopia. And it's not enough to degrade America. America's back has to be broken so that it can never rise again to threaten, you know, the global utopia. And they'll go on television if there are people that are on television, and they'll mouth platitudes about patriotism. But if you put them under sodium pentothal or you waterboarded them, they hate America and they want to wreck America. America is like the white racist citadel standing in the way of global utopia, and it has to be wrecked. So you deplete the strategic petroleum reserve, then you instigate a war with Iran. And of course, you know, there's a depopulation aspect to this. You know, at the end, when the dust settles, the population will be down by half or more. But America will never be a power again. America will be wrecked. You know, it will be coming out of ruins for decades after that. I think that's what they believe. So
depleting America. What do you believe? That's the question.
I think that as you go up, as you climb the pyramid, you get to the people that are very satanic and just want to see it all burn. They hate civilization. They hate goodness. They hate God.
Let me ask a different way, Matt, because I know you and I have talked about this before. That's why I'm prompting you here. What do you think it's going to look like on the other side of this for Americans?
It can go a lot of ways. I hope it's not like, I hope there's not a radiation factor that we're dealing with. I hope that they don't stumble our way into a nuclear exchange, which is very feasible, very, you know, foreseeable. If there's a nuclear exchange, then, you know, you don't want to be in the Northern Hemisphere. It'll be a global depression no matter what. So it's not like, oh, Argentina will be fine, Uruguay will just plug along. But I would rather be in the Southern Hemisphere if there's a nuclear exchange. But if anybody attacks our power, like there's big cyber attacks against Iran, for example. So we have the sophistication to degrade Iran's grid from, you know, outside. Well, I'm sure that they have ways to degrade our grid from inside with, you know, teams, kinetic teams. And I like to say people that live in a glass house shouldn't go around the neighborhood throwing bricks through people's windows, which is what America has been doing. People with our vulnerabilities, our cities are so vulnerable. Yeah. We don't have the social cohesion we had even during the Great Depression. People won't stand in bread lines. People aren't going to like sell apples on the street corner. It's going to go to total mayhem very fast if our power and water go out. And our enemies know this. So we're in the position of the man who lives in a glass house going around throwing bricks at people. And I think that's really stupid. But, you know, it's hard for me to understand some people like Lindsey Graham. I kind of understand some, you know, pro-Israel Zionists that are, and even Christian Zionists that are like, well, it's the end times. You know, we got to get it on with Armageddon, man. It's like, Armageddon's here, so let's get it on. Well, I don't want to get it on with Armageddon. I'd prefer like having power, electricity, you know, running water, supermarkets full of food.
I don't buy it anyway, Matt. I think this is all being a lot of this. So there's a lot of different rabbit holes we could go down. But the one I really want to get to is, because we only got a few minutes left here, is how do you see things developing over the next few weeks? Because you and I both thought that the convention was going to go a different way. We're 4 days away from the 3 days away, 4 days away from the Democratic convention. I think we both thought something was going to happen either during or before that to preempt that whole thing. How do you see that going over the next couple of weeks with, and I don't want to get into politics. I'm just,
well, looking at it, like, you know, just giving it like the Roger Stone view of, it's probably going to be something comparable to 1968, except they're going to have, you know, they don't believe in walls unless it's like around their convention or around the White House. So they'll probably have, you know, multiple rings of security where any protesting is going to be done well outside the range of cameras. I think that that Harris and Biden want to see her installed. I don't know if that's going to work that way. I don't know if Obama and Hillary Clinton have other plans, but I wouldn't rule anything out. I could see something like a Las Vegas shooting very easily at any time, either that or a Nice, France, you know, truck down the sidewalk, something like that, that is going to completely flip the script. Watching Dan Bongino, I think he's very on point about the two fake pipe bombs being planted to be found as plan A, because I don't think that they really figured that the Ray Epps storm the Capitol plan was going to work as well as it did. And if the J6 Stop the Steal rally people had not stormed the Capitol, I think they were going to go to the pipe bombs as, you know, we need to stop this whole the vote counting. We need, you know, because we can't let Americans hear about all the cheating. They were going to go with the pipe bombs. I think that things on that level are completely on the radar now. Truck bombs, bombs inside of the convention, I wouldn't rule out. We can, you know, the whole world, not just the whole world now knows that the Secret Service is a joke, that our security is really just a Potemkin village, a fiction. So it wouldn't surprise me if people snuck something into one of these venues. I wouldn't be surprised at anything. Of course, they'll try, you know, they would prefer to blame it on some right wingers. But yeah, between now and the election, I don't know what's going to break first. It's sort of like going down the mountain in a car with the brakes burning and the engine flying apart. You don't know what's going to happen first. Are we going to go off the curve? Is the engine going to throw a rod? Are the brakes going to melt? I mean, you know, we have so many ways that this is going to break. And I like to use the Titanic analogy often, that I don't care if Captain Smith is replaced by the first officer or the second officer. We already hit the iceberg. It's time for the life rafts. The ship is not going to make it to New York, right? The ship ain't making it to New York. So everybody needs to, I'll vote for Trump. I hope things work out. I would rather be in an airplane that does a survivable crash landing than one where crazy pilots fly it straight into the side of a mountain at 500 miles an hour, right? But I don't see a smooth landing, but I'll take my chances on a crash landing while I'm looking around for parachutes, you know, or on the Titanic, I'm thinking of like, what about those secondary life rafts, the kind that you just throw in the water, like the little 8-man things, because trying to herd into the 80-man life rafts, it looks like they're going to tip over or people are panicking. I think it's time to move to a secure location. Maybe it's not in America, but I think that that there's much better regions to be in than some other regions. I there are cities I wouldn't want to be in when the power goes out. That's a fact. I wouldn't want to be in some places when the power goes out.
So got a couple of minutes left. Any final thoughts for folks, given the fact that if I heard you correctly, you're saying now's the time to evacuate from a large blue city or a large city?
Oh, I think that was a few years ago. But, you know, if you're just going to be trapped in gridlock if you're trying to escape when the power goes out.
Yeah.
You know, the people who are already ready to loot supermarkets and convenience stores for fun when they're not hungry will turn cannibal in a week. You know, they've already got no moral inhibitions over beating, robbing, raping, none. So when they're hungry, they're going to just see food. And when there's no more food in the freezer section, they're going to see you as food. And it'll take us a lot longer, you know, to understand the danger that these people pose. Over the last 10 years, the whole zombie meme, all the movies, TV shows, what they're really getting at is this is what's going to happen when the cities go haywire.
Absolutely. There's
not Walking Dead. Absolutely. It's going to be the people that will eat you because they're starving and have no moral qualms left.
Yep. There's a movie called The Road that accurately describes exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Cormac McCarthy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
great movie.
In my new book, which the subtitle up in the corner is 10 years after the end of the world as we know it. So it's not like just Cormac McCarthy, The Road, you know, walking through the apocalypse with your kid, trying not to be eaten by cannibals. This is, where are there islands of civilization? How do islands of civilization spring up when there is no federal government? There is not even state government. And the only organization is completely at like a county level at best, with most of the country still just a wasteland. There obviously will be no money, no paper, no banking, no mortgages. Possession will be not 9/10 of the law. Possession will be the entire law.
Yep.
You know, nobody is going to be asking you for a car or a bank payment, because there are no banks and there are no mortgages. So it will go from barter and bartering for ammunition to eventually back to gold and silver, and then slowly back to civilization. But that's this book, Doomsday Reef, my sixth novel. It's the third in this series. So I've got six novels out now, but I recommend reading them. I mean, I like to write good novels that are interesting, not just post-apocalyptic fear porn kind of stuff.
But your first book, Mad Enemies, Foreign and Domestic, accurately described the ATF guys I worked with way back when.
My first book. I love that. I still love that logo. But I'm waiting for something like a Stadium Massacre. It could happen very easily to be blamed on semi-automatic weapons. Kamala Harris has already said that she will ban. I mean, now she's saying, I forgot what I said, but look, she has said repeatedly she's going to ban semi-autos by executive fiat. And then, you know, how many divisions does the Supreme Court have, right? Anybody that thinks that the ATF won't obey orders, you know, give you a week to turn them in, or you're an outlaw, a felon, the ATF will absolutely do it. We've seen what the police will do. The police will betray their own countries. They'll bring in immigrants to kill you. You know, fighting age men by the thousands. Border Patrol put fighting age men on buses every day to send them to your town, USA. Absolutely. So anybody that thinks that the ATF won't obey orders, And they don't need to go door to door. Everybody, you know, thinks, well, like they can't, they don't have enough. They'll make examples. You know, they'll do selective raids. They'll make flagrant examples and lock people up for 50 years. You have five AR-15s, 50 years, Supermax.
They've already done it. They're already doing it
like in this book, they'll have public service announcements to wives and ex-girlfriends and ex-wives. Hey, you think your husband has a banned weapon? Get a reward. Call 1-800-SNITCH and get a cash reward.
So, Matt, how do people find you? It's enemiesforeignanddomestic.com. That's how they can buy your books direct.
That's my website, but I'm on Twitter X and on Gab under my real name. On X, I'm Matt Bracken 48, and I'm on podcasts that have me. But I highly recommend Roundtable last night because people are carrying their cell phone around within 5 feet at 24 hours a day, and it might as well be a microphone tied straight to the FBI.
Yep,
it's virtually a microphone. The other end is at FBI headquarters.
One last thing, Mike. Looks like Mike Ferris is in the chat. And he's like, I want to have both you guys on my show. So be looking for that over the next couple of days. Looks like he's going to want us both on.
Mike Ferris, man, he's come out of nowhere. He's got like such great guests now.
He does. Present
company excluded, but I mean, he has he has unbelievable guests now. He's a great listener, like you. He's a great listener. Because you need to be a great listener when you got a compulsive talker like me on.
You know, Matt, you're 5 for 5. And this is why I wanted to get you away from the round table and do a one-on-one, because you're 5 for 5 in calling things. And I think you've got the finger on the pulse, and we'll see how the next week goes. But I think you're correct. I think we're set up for a big false flag. I think that if you haven't read his book, Enemies Foreign and Domestic, do so, because it outlines the false flag and the way that the government operates.
And I think I would keep an eye on monkeypox, because I don't think bird flu did the trick. Bird flu is going to be used to wipe out the chickens and cows, et cetera. But I think that the scare factor wasn't there. People aren't buying it. So when you see people with these horrible buboes all over their bodies, that come from the heart of Africa up through the Darien Gap, where all these immigrants from 100 countries are like wading through the same stagnant streams, just circulating all their diseases, then their kid is going to be in school next year, kid, this week, coughing and spreading God knows what. The monkeypox fear is going to be very strong. That's another vector that we have to look out for, is another biological attack used as a reason why we can't go to the polls. Why we have to do all voting by mail-in, ballot harvesting.
Yep. But I think you're right. But we'll see that in the next, probably in the next 3 weeks.
Because time is a wasting. So they've got to get on with the big scare. And the monkeypox is very scary. The other thing I would say is my books are also on Kindle and audiobook on Amazon. But if you want to get them signed from me, then you're not giving half of your money to Jeff Bezos and Amazon. And, you can find out where on my website. But anyway, if you don't want to use PayPal and you don't want to use Twitter, like Also Retired said, you can just get them straight for me. And anybody that's in the sound of my voice today, $20 will get you any of my books. Shipping and handling is special price today, shipping and handling included. And so it's funny, the books now cost me like $3.50 to manufacture a book. To make this book is $3.50. It's $5 postage and a half a buck for a bubble mailer. It costs almost twice as much to send this to you than it does to manufacture it, which is amazing, which is also why Kindle is a good deal, because it's electronic. But remember, all the Kindle books can just be deleted. When Big Brother says that's subversive, they're going to be gone. So I recommend the paper books, because they'll at least stay on your shelf till they come to physically confiscate them.
Absolutely. Matt, we'll have to do this again in a couple of weeks. I appreciate you jumping on at short notice, man. This is good stuff.
It's always fun.
All right, Jets.
Thanks.
We'll be back. I'll be back tonight with the roundtable, the audio version of the roundtable. We'll be back. I'll be back Monday. And mark your calendars for 10, 11, 12 here in Arizona. We're going to be doing a gunfighter course with Chris from Combat Studies Group. You'll get to see this old guy right here trying to run his ass off with a bunch of gear on. So if you got the time, you've got the energy, come down for those 3 days and do the gunfighter course. Otherwise, we'll see you tonight. God bless everyone. One team, one fight.